You are listening to WCJV Digital Broadcasting, Youngstown, New York.
The Paranormal News Insider from ParanewsInsider.com. Produced by WCJV Digital Broadcasting, Youngstown, New York.
Welcome to the Paranormal News Insider for the week of March 7th, 2017. Wow, it's March. And episode number 305. And this is your host, Dr. Brian D. Parsons. Yeah, March 7th already. My goodness, this year is flying by. No kidding. I guess maybe because there's a lot of stuff coming up that I'm looking forward to. Well, March 7th, let me think here. On this day in 1876, Alexander Graham Bell was granted a patent for an invention that he called the telephone. Well, it's extinct now. Nobody uses those things anymore. But on the more paranormal note, March 7, 1992, FBI agents, I should say special agents, Dana Scully and Fox Mulder landed in the very plausible state of Oregon on their first case together. Well, of course, that's fictional. It's on TV. But March 7, 1992 was the day after they first met. So it's kind of a birthday of sorts. Yesterday was their first meeting 25 years ago. I don't know about you, but that makes me feel quite old. And it's funny to watch. I don't know if you guys watch old episodes. I think they're out there on Netflix or whatever. But it's really weird to watch the technology change. Two things I always pay attention to: the cars and the phones. Go from the big bulky block phones to the flip phones. And then they really didn't do much after season 9 and then the new season where they have these nice smartphones now, which if you've seen that, well, you should have seen it by now. If you haven't, I'm going to spoil something for you. Fox Mulder and I both share the same ringtone. He doesn't know that I had it before. I had it before that episode. Anyway, if you've not seen that, sorry about that. I spoiled it, but thought it was kind of a neat piece of trivia that in the television show, The X-Files, March 7th, 1992, exactly 25 years ago today, was their first case together. But anyway, let's get back to the present or back to the future, however that works. This week's news, we're going to talk about MUFON UFO sighting statistics for February 2017. Fireballs over Tasmania by Facebook users. Imagine that. An OMG teen selfie ghost. Yeah, what about that irritating story? And are gross groups respectful of investigation locations? We'll talk about that interesting topic and answer that question. We'll also ask, should we bring back extinct species? We've been talking about that a lot lately. And an interesting new perspective tonight. And last but not least, spirit in the sky. Yes, this is what I don't want to say wasted, but I spent a good portion of my Sunday afternoon researching a pretty decent-sized story that's been floating around. Floating around, that's a hint for you about that. We'll talk about that. Plus the book of the week. And this week's news is brought to you by the Institute of Metaphysical Humanistic Science. IMHS is a premier online and distance learning university that offers high-quality doctorate and doctoral PhD metaphysics degrees that will enhance your life and career, even if your career is not in the metaphysics field. Metaphysics is actually the scientific study of consciousness, existence, and reality, and includes such topics as theoretical mathematics, quantum physics, to cosmology, and psychic phenomena. Metaphysical humanistic science, also called metaphysical humanism, is simply our term for the study of metaphysics focused on understanding and enhancing the human condition and all that it encompasses. For more information on the Institute of Metaphysical Humanistic Science, visit metaphysicsinstitute.org. And the bills are paid. Well, some anomalous notes. I did spend a little time also Sunday instead of writing my book that I've been dragging my heels on writing, I updated the events listing once again. There's a lot of new additions and fixed a couple of corrections. I don't know how I keep screwing this up. It's not that hard. So it's been updated. So check it out and look for an event in your area if you're so interested in going to one of these things. And speaking of which, oh my goodness, I forgot to mention this the last couple of weeks, but I want to remind you, in case I think I might have mentioned this, the Pennsylvania Bigfoot Camping Adventure. It's coming up, and it's less than 60 days now. It's the 60-day countdown. I think it's 59 days now. May 5th through the 7th, Farmington, Pennsylvania, Benner's Meadow Run Cabins, campgrounds too. Get there. Be there. I'll be speaking. Steve Coles will be speaking. Stan Gordon, Jay Batrachin, Rosemary Ellen Guiley, Ronald Murphy, John Sable, and a lot more. Those are just the speakers. There's also going to be workshops. You're going to learn hands-on how to do different things within the cryptozoological field. Goodness, that alone would be enough to get me to go. But we're also going to take you out with some of these guys, Steve Coles, myself, Eric Altman, who's putting on this event. We're all going to take different groups out there, and we're going to teach you out in the woods how to do what we do, how to, you know, beat trees with sticks and scream loudly in the woods and wait for somebody else to scream loudly back, thinking that we're Bigfoot. You get it, but a lot more than that. And we'll teach you how to read tracks and how to look for what we're looking for and how to do different things out there in the woods. I don't want to spoil everything, but it's going to be a ton of fun. And that's just the tip of the iceberg. I mean, there's a charity auction. Oh, charity auction. Well, that's the whole reason for this entire thing. 3 days, two nights, might even stretch it out to 3 days and three nights. Raffles, day and night hikes, speakers, workshops. Also going to have a cookout. Oh, boy, I'll tell you what, that food was fantastic last year. Looking forward to that again. We're also going to have some movies, and we're not talking Avengers. We're talking cryptozoological movies, and a lot of them are produced by people that are going to be in attendance. You can buy these movies, and it's about some really interesting monsters that we'll also be talking about all weekend long. Yes, this is a charitable event. Unity, A Journey of Hope, Lucky Paul's Animal Rescue, and Fayette Friends of Animals will all benefit. They're all local charities in that area in Fayette County where this event is taking place in Farmington, Pennsylvania. Great group of people. Got to meet them last year. They brought out a lot of dogs from the animal rescue, and everybody was very, very appreciative of the money that we generated. And I tell you, the charity auction, my goodness, I probably spent like $70, $80 from that. As a speaker, I don't get paid to go. I do get reimbursed for my campsite, a little bit of gas money or whatever. But I tell you what, I spent that plus on the charity auction. I've got all kinds of goodies. Outbid, I think it was Kenny Biddle, who I'll be mentioning later on. I outbid him for a book. I love my books. You guys know that. Don't mess with my books. Jay Batrachin and I, we had a sword fight, Highlander style, out there in the grass on Sunday, Sunday afternoon. Lots of fun. It's just so much fun. But knowing that you're giving to a charitable organization, actually three of them, it makes it well worth it. Plus, you're learning a lot. I mean, I've learned a lot last year from a lot of people that were in the event speaking, and just people that just showed up. Butch Witkowski was there. He'll be there again. Lon Strickler from Phantoms and Monsters, a very, very good website. He's also a radio show host. He'll be there as well. It's going to be a great time. A great time. There'll be a lot more people there this year than there was last year. So check it out, PABigfootCampingAdventure.com. It's the adventure of a lifetime. I think it's PA Bigfoot Camping Adventure. It will be intense because we're going to be intense. Anyway, yeah. I want to mention again, too, since we're back here on WCJV Digital Broadcasting, we had a little kind of an emergency, I guess. It's an emergency. And we were not able to have the show live. And I went ahead and produced my own show like I used to on Friday. I wanted to get this show out to you guys, episode 304. So you had that information because I was already compiling a lot of stuff for this episode. Also, Friday, I recorded after some issues with Mixlr trying to do a live show. It was a pain in the rear. But I got the show out to you guys. And I wanted to mention, now that we're back on live, that I wanted to thank Maria Pinero for coming on live on WCJV 2 weeks ago and talking about Ghost City Tours and what she's got lined up at the Andrew Jackson Hotel in New Orleans, Louisiana. Sounds like a great time. Don't think I'm going to be able to do that because I'm coming back from a cruise a few days before that. But Monday, April 24th and or Tuesday, April 25th, you can go down there, spend the night in the hotel and investigate the hotel. I could do one night or both nights. Personally, if I was you, I would do both. Talk about being able to really get into a location. Two nights in a row, that's unheard of. It's very hard to do that. Not only that, but you get to borrow their equipment, and you also get to take home your own evidence, which is awesome. More information available at ghostcitytours.com, ghostcitytours.com. Lots of other stuff that they're doing as well, so ghostcitytours.com. Last but not least, St. Albans Sanatorium in Radford, Virginia is putting on an event May 19th through the 20th. I'm going to be there. I'm going to be speaking there. Looking forward to that. Yes, I'll be back in a sanatorium where I belong. You can find more information at enigmacons.com. That's enigmacons.com. That's it. And that's going to take us to UFO news for tonight. Always excited to talk about the MUFON sighting statistics. I think this is an interesting thing. Some people kind of are like, why do you bother? What are you really getting out of this? What's the point? Well, the point is MUFON collects these sighting statistics from all over the world. And granted, a majority of them are from here in the United States. And it doesn't really tell you what's happening or what's going on, but it does give you kind of a measuring stick for how MUFON is being utilized by the general public and kind of where these reports are coming from. It doesn't tell you that these reports are specifically coming at these time frames. It's just that these are when these reports are coming in. So it's not an exact measurement. It's not precise statistics that's showing you exactly where sightings are hot and where they're not. But still, I think it's useful to stand back and look at these and gauge from month to month and year to year to see what's going on. So all that preface being said, the Mutual UFO Network, MUFON, they published these numbers right at the beginning of the month for the statistics for the month prior. Usually, it's weird. Actually, this month, I got it pretty early. I got it on, I want to say March 5th, which is pretty early for me, and it would have been in time for the show. But normally, I get it like in the middle of the month or the end of the month. And I don't know. It's just kind of, it's almost too late, I think. So I'm very fortunate that MUFON field investigator and fan of the show, she's a frequent listener of the Paranormal News Insider, Audrey Hamilton. Well, she sends me this awesome information just as it reaches her inbox. And trust me, she sent it to me the morning of March 1st at 5 o'clock in the morning. I was actually just getting to work and I got the email. I was all excited. So excited. I forgot to reply to her and thank her. Usually I do. And I kind of forgot. Sorry, Audrey. But I did get the email and broke that stuff down a couple of days later to bring to you. But first, let's look at January real quick. Do you mind? Okay, good. Now, I predicted 516 worldwide sightings in January. Well, MUFON reported 580. Well, that's good. I undershot. I predicted 398 reports in the United States, and MUFON reported 404. That's pretty close. That's not too shabby. So what about February? Well, my prediction for February, I know some people wrote this down, so I can't lie, I can't fib. Worldwide sightings are predicted 527. Now, MUFON recorded 564 worldwide sightings. Well, that doesn't sound all that close, but it's actually within 7%. I know it's a numbers thing. It's still not my best. Still not the closest I've done. My prediction for the United States reports was 389. MUFON recorded 405. Okay, fine. You're not impressed. That's fine. That's within 4%, but again, not my best prediction. So as far as other countries, the United Kingdom submitted the second most reports with 43. Canada was next with 35. Iran turned in 13. Germany, 7. Australia, 5. Portugal, Mexico, and France with 4 each. Ireland and India had 3 reports each. And 28 other countries submitted 2 or less reports, with 18 of those with only 1 report. And looking at the United States, it's no surprise to see California in the lead with 54 reports. Florida, 2nd with 37. Texas, next with 35. Ohio, 23. Pennsylvania, 20. Illinois with 19. New York had 17 reports. Michigan, 13. North Carolina and Missouri with 12. Alabama, 10. Georgia, Arizona, Indiana, and Wisconsin with 9. And Nevada and Tennessee with 8. We also had Oregon, Washington, and Minnesota with 7. Virginia, Maryland, New Jersey, and South Carolina with just 6 reports each. And 21 other states turned in 5 or less reports, with 6 states turning in 1 report each. And I do another thing. If you follow the show, I like to break down per capita. So I take the essentially the number of sightings in that particular state, divided by the population, and then multiplied by 100,000. And that gives me a number that represents how many people in per 100,000 saw a UFO. And it's usually a percentage. It's like a part. It's like somebody's arm, usually. It's pretty rare that we've approached an entire full person per 100,000. We could break it down to per 200,000, but traditionally per capita is per 100,000. And if you looked at the United States population, which according to the July 2014 estimate, it was 318,857,056. Now, if you look at the per capita, the total number of U.S. sightings divided by that number, multiplied by 100,000, gives you 0.127. So that's kind of our average. Anything above that is not necessarily significant, but it's impressive. Anything below that, well, who cares? Now, California, obviously, California has the largest population of any U.S. state. That's why they should always be number one when we're talking about the number of reports. And occasionally you'll hear Texas or Florida being number one. Well, they're also pretty close in the ranking of states, but California has everybody beat by a fair margin as far as the number of people in their particular state. Well, they finished with a whopping 54 reports, leading the way, but their per capita was 0.139. Yes, it's above the U.S. average, but it's really 0.139. What is that? Like, I don't know, from your elbow to your shoulder on a person that, you know, I don't know. The state of Oregon, 0.176 with 7 sightings. Ohio had 0.198 with 23 sightings. And New Hampshire, 0.226 with 3 sightings. Well, they're the 42nd state in population. Nevada had 0.281, which is pretty impressive, for 8 sightings. They're actually 35th in population in the United States. And Idaho had 0.305. with 5 sightings, and they're number 39 in population. I don't know. I think I'm going to give Nevada the win this month with their 0.281. It's not really huge. It's not really significant. I mean, we've had I think so far, 0.68 is the winner way back in June of 2016 with Alaska. They only had 5 sightings. So it's again, it's not huge. It's not significant. It's not 4 out of 100,000 people or anything like that. But that would be huge. And if a state had hundreds of sightings, that would definitely mean something happened at that point. So that's your sighting statistics. Yes, yes, yes. My predictions for March. Let me think here. I've been undershooting a lot lately. So I'm gonna ramp it up a little bit here. 584, write that down. 584 worldwide sightings is my prediction. And I'm gonna go with let's see, multiply, carry the two, add plus this. 412. We'll go with 412 US sightings for the month of March. And we'll see how I do. Been doing pretty good, I think. I don't know. Well, I don't care. Typically, the term fireball, when used in UFO reports, leans toward a meteor explanation. We've heard that 100 times on this show. It's just how it is. Fireball equals meteor. People describe UFOs as fireballs. 99% of the time, I don't even mention those stories anymore because they are. They're pretty much just meteors. And these fireball events are usually a flash of white or green in the night sky. And while pretty obvious to most people that it's just a meteor, some people, they flip out and assume that an invasion is in motion. Well, on the early morning of February 28th, many scurried to social media to spread panic, fear, and leaps of belief as a strange streak of light, leaving what appears to be a contrail, was seen over skies in Tasmania. Now, this was during the day, early morning. And so this object was like bright orange, and it looked like flames were coming out the back. But if you've ever seen this in the morning sky or the evening sky, you've seen an airplane that's just kind of caught in the sunrise. You kind of know what I'm trying to describe here. However, many people were speculating that this was more than likely a UFO invading the skies of Tasmania. Now, Air Services Australia told the Australian Broadcasting Corporation that what people were seeing was merely Emirates EK-488, an Airbus A380 jet, which was en route from Dubai to Auckland, New Jersey. Yeah, just an airplane, which is kind of what it looks like in the quick video and the stills that were uploaded to Facebook by Leanne Peters. However, one intelligent Facebook user was very quick and precise in his argument to point out that, quote, and I quote, I can't take credit for this. I would never dare take credit for this insightful post. As this Facebook user said, quote, "This isn't a bloody airplane. Wake up, people. Planes don't leave flames. So how about you all open your F asterisk, 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 G eyes and get some perspective," unquote. I mean, how do you even touch that argument? It's extremely persuasive. I would not want to debate with this person. I mean, wow. Well, Australian National University astronomer Brad Tucker, he threw his opinion in the ring, and he says that the bright object in the morning sky was not an airplane, but it wasn't aliens either. He's guessing that the object that appears to be flaming is a CubeSat satellite called Lemur 2. However, this is just a guess, and he says that he's only 75% confident in this assertion. I'd like to see his math, personally. But the bright streak in the sky looks a little too long for a CubeSat satellite. These things aren't that big. They're pretty small, actually. And the streak was described as lasting a little longer than what we would expect from a small reentry of a meteor or even a satellite. And most experts agree that this was not aliens, not a meteor, not space junk, and not any of the wide variety of guesses. My goodness, it was really entertaining to read the Facebook experts that flooded the post. That was entertainment. However, I do have to admit that it was Facebook users that quickly discovered the Emirates flight on aircraft flight checking websites to confirm that this plane was in fact in the air and in the area at that exact time. The bright object was in the sky a little too long, again, to be a meteor or man-made space junk. It would have left long lines in the sky just like this. But it just, I mean, if you've seen this once, you've seen it five times, you know what an airplane looks like, I would hope. Well, the fact that the sun was rising sheds some light on the observation that this angle of light would create the illusion of flames. The sun coming up at that angle and your perspective of seeing that, I mean, I hope you would expect that. It's just kind of, we've seen it in the clouds. I mean, you've seen this before. Why? I don't have to justify this. It creates that illusion of flames from ordinary clouds or even contrails. I mean, I've seen it, I don't know how many times. I'm sure everyone else has. Now, the UFO investigative website, ufoofinterest.org, headed by Scott Brando, compared the flight tracker info with the direction and location of the craft and supported the general thought that this plane was responsible for what was seen in the video. I mean, I don't need all that flight tracker stuff to support that. I see what I see, and I saw it, and I agree with it. It's just an airplane. But like I said, people were freaking out, and I think that's the problem when you get people together on social media sometimes. Sometimes we tend to want to believe a little bit more fantastic of a thing than what is actually really going on at that time. Sometimes that's just unfortunately, that's kind of like a social situation where groups tend to think a little bit more extreme than they would, you know, as a group than they would on their own. I'm trying to remember what that's called. Polarization, group polarization. That's what it's called, where people tend to think a little bit more extreme than what they would as an individual. And I think that's exactly what we have here. Sometimes when these stories break and these things happen, you get the people of logic always come on and say, come on, dude, that's an airplane. What's wrong with you? And then you get the other people, they'll come up with some kind of thing about how, well, this is real and this is their message, or blah, blah, blah. Anyway, we're going to jump into ghost news. Enough of that. You've probably seen this. I mean, have you seen it? The picture of the 13-year-old girl with braces sitting in the truck? Well, if you haven't, let me throw this in the chat room real quick. And if you're not in the chat room, but you're missing out on some great conversations going on. A lot of people in there having a good old time. Click on that link there. I don't have the picture separated out. No, I don't. So, yeah, you're going to have to look for yourself. Little girl with braces sitting in the pickup truck, taking a selfie. That's what you do, right? Take the little pictures and, yeah, I don't know. Let's try this. Let's see what happens here. This might be bad. Yeah, it's bad. That's okay. You guys can get a glimpse here of this picture. And in the background, you see this girl's brother. He's wearing a green shirt, a baseball hat, and right next to him is this spooky ghost. Spooky ghost that looks I don't know, looks fake. To put it bluntly. But this story is really been running rampant. I mean, I don't even know what to say about this, to be honest. I wouldn't normally have talked about something like this because I think it's pretty obvious. It's very safe to say that despite all the facts put together by this girl's mom, what's her name? Jessica Ogletree. She swears up and down that this was not digital manipulation. This is the real thing. But then at the end of it, she says, feel free to share, which is a little confusing. Wouldn't you want somebody to say, can somebody prove that this is not? Can somebody prove that this is? Can somebody figure this out? No, she's matter of fact, says that nobody else was there. We know all these factoids. And this was definitely a ghost. And there's a lot of speculation about this. People are offering their 2 cents. Some are offering a few dimes and nickels. Some have thrown down Benjamins. But all this speculation and arguing over reflections, baseball hats and other details, it kind of takes away from the fact that we're spending a lot of time analyzing something that's pretty obvious to me that it's fake. Skeptical investigator Kenny Biddle, who I've already mentioned, offered up a very good summary of the multitude of issues, including the perspective of the purported ghost, which would be a bit short. You know, if this picture was real, And it would be a little bit too close to the brother of the girl. It'd pretty much be in this guy's lap. The guy's in the back of the truck, so he's not like behind the truck. Whoever put this picture together wasn't really thinking of perspective. Now, Kenny's analysis is on it's on Facebook. And to be honest, it's probably the best you're going to find on the topic so far. I haven't seen anyone else really tear this thing apart because, like I said, it's not even worth it. But Kenny, he goes the extra mile sometimes. I'm not a big fan. This is kind of like a money grab. I don't know how they're making money from it, but I think it's more of an attention grab. But I think we're going to see. I'm predicting, this is my prediction, I think we're going to see a public apology about this photograph in the next couple of days, that the mom is going to admit that they found out that it's fake or something like that. That's just a prediction. I don't know. Maybe I'm wrong. Maybe it'll just going to fade away like it should. I don't know. Kenny Biddle, by the way, if you don't know this, he's going to be at the PA Bigfoot Camping Adventure. Very knowledgeable guy. We hung out in the woods. Well, that's a long story. We hung out in the woods last year. And it was a good time. And that's all I'm going to say about that because I'm going to, okay, let's just move on here. So before I embarrass myself. Anyway, it's the bottom of the hour, and I want to let you know that you are listening to WCJB Digital Broadcasting from Youngstown, New York, emanating live at WCJVradio.com, and listening to the Paranormal News Insider with your host, Dr. Brian D. Parsons. Now, I mentioned the 25th anniversary of Mulder and Scully conducting their first investigation together on March 7th, 1992, 25 years ago. Well, the show was actually on 1993, I think September. So, the time's a little off. It was a pilot episode. Cut them some slack. Well, anyway, if you're interested in X-Files and investigations and paranormal stuff, tune in tomorrow night, WCJV. You can catch Paranormal Experienced with host Kat Hobson as she talks with real-life X-Files investigator and former FBI agent John D'Souza. He's going to be the guest on Paranormal Experienced with host Kat Hobson tomorrow night, March 8th. And that's going to be at 8 p.m. Eastern, 7 p.m. Central. I think that's right. Tomorrow night. Again, right here on WCJVRadio.com. Great shows. You're missing out if you're not listening to more than just me. So we have I don't know if it's sad, depressing, or irritating, annoying, or all the above kind of story. You know, I mentioned Haley Stevens, if you heard the show last week when I did it Friday. Haley Stevens, I talked about the interesting statistical work done by the website hauntedtheories.com. Check out their blog, hauntedtheories.com. Well, this week, Haley brings us some not-so-nice news from the antics of a ghost group that investigated Drakelow Tunnels in the United Kingdom. Now, this area was once an underground military area used during World War II and the Cold War era. In a post on Facebook, the Drakelow Tunnels volunteer posted this message about a group that had just investigated. And they said, quote, "It is with great shame that I have to announce that further damage has been caused at Drakelow to areas we have recently renovated, painted, and finished. The mind really boggles that groups of professionals have complete disregard for the site they are hiring by leaving candles without holders to burn down on wooden frames. Apart from the obvious and incredible serious fire risk, it is also an area where we, the volunteers, have paid out of the money we have raised to renovate and bring back to as new condition. Not only have candles been left on wooden sills, but also our newly painted walls and curbs splashing wax and again burning down to the surface. Please note this damage has occurred in a time frame where we are aware of the group involved. You are not a new group and should know better. You will not get a second chance. If you are found doing it again, we will have you banned from holding events at Drakelow." That's an unquote there, but the post goes on. to explain more of the damage created by the melted wax and the flame. It's a shame that more groups are not a bit more responsible, especially when you're paying money to go into a location. But you have to consider this, that this also creates a few questions and a couple of future dilemmas. I mean, first, why would they not just blast this group publicly? I mean, I would. Granted, the group can say, well, you know, that's slander or whatever. But if they did it, if you know they did it, then why not? Make an example of these people. I mean, granted, it could hurt future business. People may not want to go there if they're being, you know, groups are being publicly shamed. But my goodness, it's going to get out eventually. And if you know who they are, I mean, why on earth would you allow them back? I mean, to give them a second chance? My goodness, no. I would ban them immediately. I would say, you know who you are, and you're never coming back. I mean, it sounds to me like maybe this group has a little bit more to do with this location than just the occasional ghost hunt. But still, I think something needs to be done here. A lot of places I go, don't they make groups fill out forms to protect the location from this type of damage? I know when I go to pretty much any location I've ever investigated, I've had to fill out some kind of waiver or some kind of form that held me liable for any damage that my group caused or I caused. Groups sometimes will have a liability insurance, or you're required to have that, or you're required to sign up for that location's liability insurance while you're on site, that if something does happen, that you're financially responsible. I mean, you also have to think that this cannon shot done by this Drake Lowe tunnels, it may not just be to warn future groups, but it may also hurt others in the future. A lot of organizations, especially nonprofits, one involved with trying to revitalize or merely preserve a historic location, and I've seen plenty here where I live in Ohio and where I've traveled all over the place. Now, they've allowed ghost groups in with a fee to help offset costs, to help with renovation costs, and to, you know, just share the location with people and get other people interested. But it's a slippery slope, I think, personally. You should know when to draw the line, and you should charge a little bit more than what you think you should charge to keep groups like this from coming in and causing destruction. And again, many groups they're required to fill out some kind of liability form, or again, the group should be insured, or they're asked to be insured. But if antics like this continue, I think some other locations, including this one, may see that the reward may not be worth it through the risk that's involved. And it could really hurt this kind of ghost tourism in the future. I really think that incidents like this will begin to add up, and people are going to start looking around for other ways to start generating income, making money, other than allowing groups to just traipse through an area and leave burning candles all over the place. Now, Haley brings up a good point toward the end of her blog when she mentions a deposit that is left that can only be picked up once the location has been inspected for damage. I mean, in this case, while the group seemed to have little regard for the location, even if the damage was accidental, I still feel the location, I personally think that they're just a little too generous to not put something in place to protect damage from occurring without any liability. So I'm not blaming them. I mean, it's the blame really goes on this group, but still, I think if you would have had something in place, maybe you could have prevented it. I don't know, but you know they're going to step it up now. They said that they're going to put up cameras as well to kind of monitor what people are doing. That's good. You should. Because a lot of mischief, and that's just not the only kind of mischief that happens on some of these ghost hunts in the dark with the lights off at dead time. Sounded like Batman there for a second. Anyway, get a shot of hot tea. And in other news, I've talked about the woolly mammoth. I don't know. It's becoming the mascot of the show lately, and being considered to be brought back to life. Now, scientists are working toward being able to create the cells to be able to fertilize an egg of an elephant in order to do this. And I kind of expressed that I'm not a big fan of the idea. And there was a recent story on stuff.co.nz that kind of backs up some of my concerns. It actually raises a few more. Rachel Klun has an article on stuff.co.nz titled, Why We Shouldn't Bring Back Extinct Species. Or again, many thoughts that I share. They're put together pretty nicely in this little article. Now, one fact is that if these creatures, these extinct creatures are brought back, say like a thylacine or a woolly mammoth is recreated and reintroduced, it could actually affect the conservation efforts of other animals due to funding being shifted in another direction or thinned out for species that actually need the help. This isn't just an Australian thing or a New Zealand thing. I mean, this can apply anywhere new animals are introduced if things don't go according to plan. And knowing humanity, it probably won't. We've actually seen this Dakotas with wolves recently. It's been something that's happened. Professor Hugh Possingham, chief scientist with the Nature Conservancy, says, quote, in terms of extinction, the question arises, should we be investing in that? And I think our study suggests if it's not going to generate additional funds, if it's funding that would have otherwise gone to threatened species, then extinction is pretty expensive. You get much bigger bang for your buck just looking after the things you've got, unquote. Well, that makes perfect sense. Don't worry about things that don't exist and plan on spending money there. Let's worry about what we got, because then otherwise we're going to be spending that money again in the future, bringing back the extinct species that we killed off to worry about the other extinct species. I don't know. That's just how I see that. And the professor also makes some other interesting questions when he says, quote, if a thylacine is born, who's going to teach it to be a thylacine? And how does it learn? And how do you get enough of them to create a viable population? Unquote. Well, that's a couple of great points put right together there. I mean, even if you do bring back a woolly mammoth or a thylacine, how's it really going to know what it is or how to act the way it is if it's not taught? I mean, this is where nurture versus nature come into play, and some people have their opinions about that. But ultimately, pretty much every animal learns from its mother to some extent, especially kind of, I don't want to say complicated, but, you know, higher animals, thylacine and the woolly mammoth, these aren't just bugs. They don't just rely on eating and breeding and dying. And there's some complicated stuff that these animals go through. So who's going to be there? And how are we going to do that? I mean, DNA is not enough. I mean, will this animal have any true instincts in its DNA after essentially being Frankenstein together from what we have and what we want to fill it in? I mean, just like Jurassic Park. I mean, will it just be an animal in the rawest form without any ability to survive on its own? Also, how much time, effort, money, conservation, land, etc. will it take to create a population that can sustain itself and not eliminate itself through things like interbreeding, which is something that's killing the cougars down in the – or I should say the Florida panther, the cougars that live down there in southern Florida. There's just not enough of a viable population anymore that breeding alone is actually killing them off because their diseases and different things are eliminating them. So how do you create a viable population? I mean, you just create them in jars? I mean, that's just – what's the point? I mean, something I also mentioned previously was these animals went extinct because the conditions on the planet. Earth basically said, you're done. Enough of you. Move on. Next thing. The woolly mammoth died out mostly because the climate changed in a majority of the area where it lived. It had its day, and Earth has changed. Earth is still changing. And the way Earth is changing now is not favorable to a woolly mammoth. This fact makes it even more silly to even consider bringing them back. But yet scientists, they're still hard at work doing it. Now, Professor Possingham adds to this thought when he says, quote, Thylacines might have been affected severely by disease brought in by domestic dogs, and those diseases may still exist, unquote. So yes, this is another major thing that scientists don't seem to address. How will even a woolly mammoth adjust to the current conditions, the current climate, and new diseases? To make this argument a little bit more complex, some might say the woolly mammoth might be protected by modern-day diseases because it is being spliced and bred by modern elephants. If the DNA is more elephant-like and all we have is an elephant with cosmetic changes, well, then is it really a woolly mammoth? And granted, the point of the article is mostly about the financial impact of bringing extinct species back, which we seem to have a hard enough time saving the existing animals we have without complicating the environment with new issues and putting these once extinct animals right back on that fast track to being eliminated all over again. That's just my thought and opinion on that one. I don't know. I'm just, the more and more I think about it, I was all excited about this years ago. I thought it was a great idea. And now that the more I have to think about it, it's not so good. It's not so good. It's kind of, I read this on Twitter the other day and I really like this. And I can't remember exactly how it goes, but it's something like, when I was a kid, I loved zoos. I loved going to zoos because I loved animals. And now as an adult, I hate zoos because I love animals. And it's essentially kind of my thought process here. I was excited to think about the prospect of these animals coming back and being able to see a thylacine. How great would that be? But at what cost? And are you really seeing that animal? Been kind of lazy here with these links in the chat room. My goodness, not doing my job tonight. But I'll throw that one in the chat room. And I do share all of these links in the chat room as time goes by during the week here on Facebook. And that is linked to my Twitter account. So you'll get all these links to these stories and original articles, links back to the original sources and different things that you're not normally going to get through your traditional or your typical paranormal news outlets. And there's a couple of giants out there that dominate, and there's some that are, well, questionable. Let's just put it that way. They kind of threw out some fake news. And speaking of fake news, I kind of mentioned this at the onset of the show, and if you follow me on Facebook, you probably saw my onslaught of posts on Sunday afternoon. I don't normally do that, but I was a little excited because I was getting close to finding the source for this particular story. And, I don't want to put the, let's see what this is. The, this story has just kind of exploded over the course of the last, I don't know, but it's been about a week. Well, not even a week. I think 5 days it's been out, and story has really gone viral. And again, it's this is kind of one of those stories that personally I'd rather ignore. But again, it's gained so much attention, and I've seen it pop up on a lot of people's Facebook feeds, and people are sharing it on Twitter. So it's a little, I guess, concerning. And I think a lot of people know that this story, this image, I should say, that pushes the stories is pretty fake. But the story has got people wrapped up in it a little bit. And this is about that large human-shaped cloud, which purportedly measured 330 feet long, that appeared over a Zambian shopping center. Now, the Makuba Mall in Kitwe, Zambia, in South Central Africa, was the scene for this purportedly horrific incident where this large figure hung in the sky for around a half an hour. That's quite a long time for something like that to hang in the sky. Now, onlookers were said to have either fled or prayed. Now, in the picture that accompanies the story, you see this large figure in the sky. Well, you don't see people fleeing, and you certainly don't see people praying. You see a couple of cars looking for parking spots, but that's about it. And I think they're just going to go – I think they're going to go get some pizza at Debonair's Pizza there. Now, the story mentions a witness, but there's no source of who the person was or who actually interviewed this person. or this particular witness of mystery, mysterious witness number one. Of course, other than the digital, the picture that's spread all over the place, there's really only one article that seems to be the source for all these other articles that other people are writing, and that's the Daily Mail. And if you know anything about the Daily Mail, they're not really the most trustworthy source of information, let alone paranormal stories or other anomalous type stories of information. And it looks like a handful of other sources have copied and pasted this. And there's no mention of this in any local online source. I wasted my time. I know. I looked Kitwe News, Zambia, and other local news sources to see if this story had popped up. There was a couple of links to the Daily Mail in some of the Kitwe News. But some of the comments were like, what are you talking about? I don't think this happened. This is even people that were living there in that area had said this didn't happen. Now, no reports on Facebook by anybody who purportedly saw this. No mention of this from any store that's located in Makuba Mall. Like I mentioned, Debonair's Pizza. I wasted my time. I looked up Debonair's Pizza. I looked up on different sources, TripAdvisor and different things, to see if people commented on this. Nothing. Now, the first known mention I found of the story was March 1st, 2017, 11:31 a.m. on the Facebook page of Zambian Watch. Now, within the comments are quite a few people that stated the image in the sky came from a movie. So I wasted like 5 minutes looking for this. Nothing. Now, another person mentioned a story from Nigeria about the tropical storm Dineo. Now, using that information, I very quickly found a story about a mermaid that was purportedly found after the storm left. In the picture of the mermaid, there is also the photograph of the figure in the sky. And now this appears a few weeks before the purported event over Kitwe. And the mermaid photograph, by the way, is a pretty popular one that's it's been making the rounds for quite a while. It's been used in stories from Africa to Hawaii about a mermaid being found on a beach dead. However, this mermaid is created by makeup and special effects artist Joel Harlow for the 2011 film Pirates of the Caribbean on Stranger Tides. Yeah, well, feeling a bit distracted at this point, looking up mermaid pictures, I decided to just focus on the main piece of evidence, which is what I should have done like an hour and a half before I started looking at all these different pieces of information. I mean, you think I would know better. Now, I searched for the image of the floating figure, and the one that's accompanying with the mermaid is a little bit more clear. It's less covered in clouds, but it's the exact same figure as the one that's in this news story. And there it was. That's all it took. I did a I think it was a Google image search. I tried I didn't even have to go to TinEye. I just used simple Google image search, and there it was. Pinterest, of all places, had the exact picture of this person in the sky that was untouched. It was a lot clearer, and you could actually see strings in the picture. And what it was called a Spirit Man kite, and it's manufactured by Martin Lester out of the United Kingdom. Now, the image was used for this Kitwe story. It was, it was nothing more than a kite touched up. Made to look bigger than what it was through perspective, covered a little bit more up with clouds. It was photoshopped, and you can kind of tell. I mean, it wasn't overly easy, but it wasn't that difficult to see a little bit of smudging when you zoomed in the pixels there in the sky. But I mean, we all know it was fake. It was just a matter of tying up these loose ends and finding the original picture, which is what I did. Now, again, if this had been a legitimate news story about a 300-foot human-shaped object in the sky over a fairly populated city in one of the wealthiest areas of Zambia, there would be certainly a lot more photographs, some video, as people pointed out, as well as some actual witnesses with names who would have shared the story, whether they were frightened, intrigued, or praying at the time. And essentially, I got tired. I saw this pop up on somebody else's news feed, and I said, you know what? I'm just going to write about this. So I copied the link and put it in this my story file here for the show. And one thing led to another. And within about 2 hours of writing it, which was probably about an hour and 50 minutes too much time researching this story, I figured it out. So all I have to say is whoever created this story with the intention of fooling people, go fly a kite. And I can read about my quick research into the story on the official blog for the Paranormal News Insider at paranewsinsider.blogspot.com, or just go to paranewsinsider.com and click on the blog tab at the top. And I'll share that in the chat room as well, so you guys can check that out. Blog. Well, yeah, book of the week. Yeah, if you didn't tune into the live show last week, you missed Circular Evidence by Pat Delgado and Colin Andrews about crop circles. One of my favorite books, probably my favorite book on crop circles. Not that I have a whole lot of books on crop circles, I guess. I guess I don't. I think I have like three. Very good book. It's the premier book. But this week's book of the week, a little bit different. It's going back to cryptid stuff. And all this is written by a man named Matthew A. Billy. And he's an author out of Colorado Springs, Colorado. He's also a naturalist, historian, science writer, and a defense consultant. He's a former Air Force officer, and he's the author of over 20 technical publications and articles on space-related topics. He was the lead author of the NASA-published history, The First Space Race, Launching the World's First Satellites, which was published in 2004. And he's written two books on the world's rarest and least known animals, one of which is the book of the week tonight. And that book of the week is Rumors of Existence, Newly Discovered, Supposedly Extinct, and Unconfirmed Inhabitants of the Animal Kingdom. Really interesting book. It was a book that I don't know. I didn't I wasn't all excited. You know, it wasn't like looking forward to getting this book in the aspect of, my gosh, I got to get that. This is a book where research is, or something like that. It just sounded interesting. And I'll be honest, this book is packed with information. It is literally packed. Now, it is a little older. It is from 1995, and he has written, I don't know if it's an update, but another book called Shadows of Existence that came out in 2004. I've got to get my hands on that one. I really haven't. It's on my list, but it's kind of every time I add another book. I added another book today to my list that kind of bumped this down a little further. I have a huge list. I probably have a list of, I think it's up to like 45 books that I want to buy. I think it's 45, somewhere around there. It's in the 40s at least, of books that I want to get my hands on, either through a library or have in my hand. For research purposes, or just because they're written by cool people or cool topics. But it's probably a lot more than that. Yeah, it's pretty cheap too. It's been around since 1995. But the book is really, really interesting because, again, it's packed with information. It's broken down into three sections: recent discoveries, and recent, by recent he means the 1930s. So we do talk about things like the megamouth shark, the coelacanth, which is always an interesting topic. But it goes beyond that. It goes beyond the stuff that you've heard of into things that I didn't even know existed, and types of animals that you never really thought of as being new discoveries or animals of interest to be discovered. Frogs, bats, iguanas, different types of birds, and just really interesting things. And it doesn't sound interesting when I say it's a bird or it's an iguana or whatever, but when you read these stories, it is really interesting. It really draws you into these animals. And it also does his second part here was also interesting because it's presumed extinct. These are animals that are rumored to still be around. It's includes the thylacine, also one of my favorites, the eastern cougar, And a lot of other things, some things that I never even really had thought of, or you don't really hear too much of, such as Fraser's dolphin, Stellar sea cow, but a lot of other things that are just freaky. A lot of different tigers, hogs, bats, just different things that you don't normally consider animals that are on the cusp of potentially being rediscovered. You know, you think of the typical, I always forget the name of that woodpecker, but the ivory-billed woodpecker. You tend to think of that, the eastern cougar, Tasmanian tiger, thylacine. You tend to think of those, but this includes, my goodness, there's like 20 some odd of these animals that are purportedly, potentially still alive, presumed extinct, but may still be out there somewhere. And then after that, section three, this is where it gets really interesting. Talks about the mystery animals. These are animals that we're continuing to search on, that are kind of the, I guess you could say, the cryptids. It does talk about strange whales and other stuff that we as cryptozoologists kind of look at. They're kind of weird stuff too. Stellar sea monkey, weird looking thing. McFarland's bear, different sea monsters, pygmy elephants, which I think that's been actually discovered since this book was written. Just a lot of weird stuff in this book, but it's so packed. Now, no chapter is really all that long. That's really the only downfall. But the book is extremely well researched, and it's an easy read. I sat down, I read, I would say, half of this book in one day. Well, I read part of it at lunch at work, and then I read it when I got back in the car. Then I read it when I got home. But I read pretty much half the book in one day. And it's about 166 pages as far as the actual content of the book. And there's a lot of resources at the end, which is always interesting, because then you could see different books or different sources of information for these animals. And just, man, it's just chock full. There's so many different animals in this book that it is actually a good resource to have for some of these lesser known type of animals that are considered cryptids. And it's not necessarily exactly a cryptid book. It is, but it's not, because it is geared toward nature. It's geared towards just animals. But, you know, it does brush up against with that type of topic that we talk about, undiscovered animals or animals that are thought to be extinct. And he lays it out really, really well. So, again, rumors of existence, newly discovered, supposedly extinct, and unconfirmed inhabitants of the Animal Kingdom by Matthew A. Billy is the book of the week this week. And I'm excited. Normally, I don't mention a book of the week or topic or anything that's coming up for the next week. But we got a special anniversary coming up next week. And yeah, it's another, well, it's a 20-year anniversary. Not quite as old as the X-Files. But next week, we're going to celebrate the 20th anniversary of the Phoenix Lights incident. So I already have a book that I've been reading for quite a while. It's a very, probably the best book on the Phoenix Light incident, written by the, well, if you know anything about the Phoenix Lights incident, there was a Dr. X involved in this, and this is written by that Dr. X. So it's a really interesting story, and I don't know how much we'll get in depth into the actual story of the Phoenix Lights, but regardless, I will talk at length about this book. This is a fantastic book, probably the best I've written on this or read on this subject. I've been doing some research for a book I'm writing on UFOs, so this has really come in handy, offered me some unique perspective on the Phoenix Lights incident, and I'll be talking about that in depth next week. So with that, wow, it's an hour already. One thing I do want to say, I want to have a shout out to my brother down in Texas. He does this for a living. Talk on the radio, that is, not paranormal news stuff, but he's an actual DJ. down in Texas. And, you know, I've often said this, that the radio business is very fickle and people move around a lot. I could not tell you how many radio stations Chris has worked at, but he's decided to leave. He's a program director down at Kickin' Country 103.1, and he's going to head east back to Waco, Texas. So I'll be listening in on Friday night. Good luck, bro, at 92.9 KRMX Shooter FM. He's been there before. Yes, the road goes on forever, but the party never ends. And I'll be tuning into that show, listening to him spin those Texas country hits. Great inspiration. He's the guy that put me on the air out in cow country 20-some-odd years ago. So good luck to him on his new position, new job at Shooter FM. So big thanks to Cindy, my producer. My goodness, it's good to be back. Trying to produce my own show, what a pain in the butt. Brought me back to reality of how great it is to have somebody help you and do a lot of the work behind the scenes for you. So all you have to do is worry about blabbering for an hour or however long you need to on the air. So thank you very much, Cindy. And to Dita in the chat room, as always, and Paul, I see you, Paul. Thank you, Paul. Appreciate that. And everyone else for tuning in tonight. Thank you again, Audrey Hamilton, for the MUFON sighting statistics for the month again. So keep your eyes in the skies, your ears in the woods, the hair standing on the back of your neck, and always keep your mind, well, at least slightly ajar. And above all else, don't stop believing. For the Paranormal News Insider, this is Dr. Brian D. Parsons reporting.
Listening to WCJV Digital Broadcasting, Youngstown, New York.